This audio recording is protected under U.S. copyright laws. It is produced by Nichols Patrick CPE and provided by your state society of CPAs for your personal non-commercial use. Further reproduction, distribution, or commercial use of this recording without written permission from Nichols Patrick is prohibited. Requests for permission to reproduce this material should be addressed to Nichols Patrick CPE, Suite A, 973 West Liberty Street, Hubbard, Ohio, 44425. Welcome to the weekly tax update for April 29th, 2013. We picked up 8 items to talk about this week. The first, a new publication 1450 on how to request a certificate of release of tax lien if the IRS doesn't get one out to you right away when you've paid off a tax lien. The second, a final report on the IRS audit initiative for colleges and universities that began in 2008 with questionnaires. Third, a release of appeals settlement guidelines on the federal tax treatment of refundable New York State Enterprise Zone credits, which will be of interest to our subscribers in New York State, and perhaps the underlying principle will be of interest to tax people elsewhere. And then I picked up 3 outrageous comments by different people that are involved in the tax reform process. I thought maybe you'd get a kick out of those. Next, an electronic communication out of the chief counsel's office that the chief financial officer of a limited liability company is not the person who should sign a Form 2848 power of attorney on behalf of the LLC, nor would that person be able to sign other documents involving the relationship of the LLC with the Internal Revenue Service, since the LLC is to be treated as a partnership. Then a quick note that the Marketplace Fairness Act that would impose sales tax based on point of delivery had cleared a procedural vote in the Senate and is moving toward passage. An affirmation in the Ninth Circuit of the tax court's valuation of life insurance policies distributed out of an abusive plan, but by the time the life insurance policies were distributed, there was nothing to be abusive about. We'll talk some about that. And then just a reminder that the IRS still does bank deposit analyses, and when they do and they find additional income, the courts assess additional tax and penalty. So let's get started with new publication 1450. You can either call the 800 number or you can write to the Centralized Lien Operations Department in Cincinnati, Ohio. All that information is in the 2-page document, publication 1450. Your request must contain the following information: the date of your request, the name and address of the taxpayer, one copy of each notice of federal tax lien you need released, why the lien should be released, and a telephone number with the best time for us to call you. In addition, if you have paid the tax, enclose a copy of any of these things with your request. They need at least one of these: an Internal Revenue receipt, a canceled check, a record of payment by electronic fund transfer, or any other acceptable proof of payment. The IRS cautions that, and this is a quote, "we may need to research your account to confirm you no longer have a liability," but they don't say how long that will take. Next, in the final report from the 400 detailed questionnaires in the Colleges and Universities Compliance Project, which began in 2008, we get some very interesting information. There were all kinds of adjustments, principally for underreporting unrelated business taxable income, and secondarily for improperly documenting what I thought was very rich compensation. Of the returns examined, and not all 400 returns were examined, there were increases to unrelated business taxable income for 90% of the colleges and universities examined, which picked up about $90 million. Over 180 changes to the amounts of unrelated business taxable income, a disallowance of more than $170 million in losses and net operating losses, because you can't claim a net operating loss, nor can you claim a loss from an activity that never showed a profit. You can't offset the losers against the winners if the losers have never showed a profit. That picked up another $60 million in taxes. Improper expense allowances were found on nearly 60% of the forms 990T that were examined, and the IRS picked up another $20 million from those adjustments. Finally, 20% of the colleges and universities examined failed to properly document, using the rebuttable presumption standard, the compensation paid to their top-rated executives. By the way, the average base salary of top officials in colleges and universities is $448,981. The average total compensation is over $100,000 more than that when you factor in all of the perks. What really I think should be interesting to us is the next steps. The next steps are, as a result, the IRS plans to look at unrelated business income reporting more broadly, especially at recurring losses and the allocation of expenses, and to ensure, through education and examination, that tax-exempt organizations are aware of the importance of using appropriate comparability data when setting executive compensation. Next, a 9-page settlement guideline circulated in appeals, concluding that the refundable portion of the New York Qualified Empire Zone Enterprise Credit against excise and income taxes for a percentage of real property taxes paid must be included in gross income for federal tax purposes by a cash basis taxpayer, subject to the Section 111 exclusion, which would be, in this case, the tax benefit rule. Among other things, the guidelines remind us that if a taxpayer has the option to receive cash or a future credit, the refund is fully taxable, applying the constructive receipt doctrine. Next, scary tax reform concepts picked up from an article by Amy Elliott in Tax Notes Today, starting with a publication that came out of the Senate Finance Committee. Here's the quote. In general, changes in the timing of paying a tax do not impact financial income and as a result may not significantly affect business behavior. Therefore, to incentivize business behavior, it may be more effective to provide tax incentives that are not timing-based, but instead are, for example, rate reductions or credits. Someone should tell this to my clients who are always interested in tax deferral. In fact, you know, a tax delayed has always been our goal. If we can kick it down the road, and maybe we'll never have to pay it. Who knows? Next, we have a United States Treasury official in a published statement who says as follows. Corporate tax rates and individual tax rates have been historically all over the lot. Sometimes corporate rates are higher than individual rates. Sometimes individual rates are higher than corporate rates. I think if you're thinking about trying to have a business tax system where the U.S. rates are competitive, you need to look at what rates around the rest of the world are. If you look at other countries, the rates can differ, so it's not crucial. It's just sort of where things land. What could be more critical for my client who's doing business in an S corporation than some sort of disintermediation between the C corporation tax rate and the individual tax rate? Finally, we've got Rob Portman, senator from the great state of Ohio, who is taking the position that lobbyists should be ashamed of themselves. Here's a quote. Any company that's looking out for its own interests rather than the national interests ought to be exposed for that. So Mr. Portman, a Republican, by the way, believes it's inappropriate for a corporation to lobby for the interests of its shareholders. He goes on to say, the corporate community better get their act together and come to Washington, not to say don't touch my preference, but to say we must reform this tax code to make our economy more competitive. According to Mr. Portman, corporate taxpayers have an obligation not to ask for preferential treatment, but to ask for tax reform that broadens the base and lowers the tax rate, even if they end up losers. And perhaps Mr. Portman will come and explain that to my shareholders, right? Next, an electronic communication coming out of the chief counsel's office that the chief financial officer, who is not a member of a limited liability company and not the tax matters person, may not sign on behalf of the limited liability company in dealings with the Internal Revenue Service. The specific document involved here is a Form 2848 power of attorney, but the principle would apply to other signatures as well. Next, the Marketplace Fairness Act is continuing to move through Congress on April the 24th, passing a procedural vote in the Senate by 75-22. The Marketplace Fairness Act will impose sales tax collection at point of delivery in all states. Congress has the power to legislate a national law rather than permit the current patchwork quilt of regulations that's developing among the various states, with, by the way, the help of the U.S. Supreme Court, to impede electronic commerce. Electronic commerce simply needs certainty here, and the Marketplace Fairness Act would do that. Next, we have the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals affirming a decision of the U.S. Tax Court on the value of life insurance policies distributed from a 419AF6 plan. Such plans were identified by the IRS as being abusive transactions, and the scheme was plan which purported to be a multi-employer qualified plan bought life insurance, big life insurance policies on the lives of the business owners, paid the premium, made deposits to the plan, which were used to pay the premiums. The deposits to the plan were deductible. And then after 5 years, you terminate the plan and you distribute the policies when the cash surrender value is relatively low. And all the insured has to do is keep the policy in force for a while. Well, we've had some decisions going both ways here. At least they appear to go to both ways. But those where the government have prevailed have been where policies that had significant cash values that could be realized the only impediment to realization was the passage of time were found to be taxable without consideration of the surrender charge. In the Schwab decision, the policies had no value. In fact, one of them was underwater when they were distributed, and the only way the taxpayers here would ever have any value would be if they paid premiums in excess of $100,000 a year on each policy in order to restore the inside fund in a universal life policy. So there was no circumvention of the rule that says distributions of value from a corporation are taxable. There simply was no value to be distributed here, and the IRS lost this one, not because the theory is bad, but because the facts were bad. There simply was no value distributed. Finally, this week, we have Albert F. Martell. He and Mrs. Martell filed a joint return for 2007. When the IRS audited the return, they discovered that Mr. Martell had some unreported income, and they did that with a bank deposit analysis. Now, he had a pretty good job. He made about $150,000 a year as a roofing salesman, but he also had some other income. He had a side business which he called Plus Net, or he called Net Tech, the Net Tech, which took in looks like about $28,000 or $29,000. They deposited the checks in the bank, but they conveniently forgot to include those in the income. And I think their return might actually have avoided detection had they not claimed as other expenses a $63,000 item, which they identified as a business loan. Now, a $63,000 expense in Part 5 of Schedule C is going to attract the attention of the Internal Revenue Service. Having attracted the attention of the Internal Revenue Service and being subjected to a bank deposit analysis, the Martells had no more secrets. Their total deposits were $271,000, total non-taxable and reported items $241,000, which left about $30,000 of unreported income, and that turns out to have been classified as self-employment income. So you have the income tax plus the self-employment tax plus the accuracy-related penalty. Well, that's it for this week. It's a wrap. We look forward to seeing you again next week. Hopefully, we'll have some more interesting items. Meanwhile, stay safe.